Welcome, welcome, coaches, teachers, parents, and medical professionals. You are listening to Larissa Mills and my podcast, At the Table. I am the founder of iParentGen.com. And today and every day, we are going to discuss how families and schools are managing technology and raising children and teaching them. We are also going to listen to how technology is impacting athletes and their level of sport. So let's get to it. Stay tuned and please call in with your questions or join us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram. But parents, you are not alone. There are courses, articles, and videos on my website. Please sign up for free. So let's get listening. Hi there, Tracy. How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm so glad that I found you and you're helping teens who are introverted, and I wanted to say welcome to At the Table today with Larissa. Can you give us a little bit of background about yourself, Tracy, for our listeners here?
Yeah. First, I want to say thank you for the invite to come on because I love talking about what I do. So great to have a platform for that. So I'm a social worker, and I've been in private practice for about 4 years. I've been doing counseling for about 15 years, but the past 3 years focused more on introverted teens, introverted adults, mm-hmm. and really saw a gap there that in their quietness, they see the world differently, feel the world differently. Mm-hmm. So to me, it made sense that counseling then would be different for them. Mm-hmm. I'm also an introvert myself, and I didn't discover that until I was about age 40. And with that, I didn't know, why did I act this way? Why did I get overwhelmed so easy? Mm-hmm. Why couldn't I connect like other people did? Mm-hmm. And then once I found out I was introverted, it just all made so much sense for who I am.
Is it like a switch went on for you?
Yeah. It's like when you get that piece of information and just like that, oh, okay, now I make sense to myself.
Okay. Because many people and children, once they figure out that's what it is and we start educating them and helping them with that, and even some of my friends found out later in their lives, that's me. They're like, oh, I feel this way. Oh, that's why I feel this way. And it's almost validation.
Completely. Yeah. Because people like extroversion is considered what's normal. So when you're not extroverted, then there's something wrong with me.
It's funny because some of my friends are really good. My best friends are introverts, but with me, we're extroverted together. really animated with me.
Yeah, and when an introvert is comfortable, they look like an extrovert.
Yes, and I think that's interesting social dynamics.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then sometimes that can be confusing for a person. How come I can talk so easily here and in that staff meeting or talking with another parent? I just completely shut down and I can't find one thing to say.
Yeah. Well, Tracy and I are going to discuss how we can help introverted teens and anxious teens by educating parents today. I'm going to ask her how much screen time and social media is adequate for these types of issues so they don't cause more anxiety today. So let's grab a coffee and let's get to it. So Tracy, I know we've chatted a little bit just before and we could talk about a million things about this topic. And what really captured me to this angle of a teen is that I'm seeing more of them, and so are the pediatricians and psychologists. So can you share with our audience and listeners your experience with introverted children, maybe even define what it is?
So somebody who's more introverted, they like to be social. So there's this myth that introverts are antisocial, which isn't true. They like to be with people, but they get drained quicker. Right. So
yes, I see that.
Yeah. So that's where the junior high school can be quite a lot for these introverted teens. I think with COVID, it's changed it a bit because their interactions are reduced if they're mostly staying in one classroom. Mm-hmm. But they can get drained easier. So they need to be away from people. As introverts, we tend to be more private. We tend to be more independent. So I think those are kind of the key things that really define what an introvert is. Mm-hmm. The other piece that I want to talk about is also highly sensitive people, because there's a strong overlap between the two. And with a highly sensitive person, to me, the key factors there is they feel like they feel what other people are feeling, but they feel it deeper.
And so more empathy?
Yeah, they can feel more empathy, more compassion. But if they're sad, so let's say a family's moving, the highly sensitive kids likely is going to be more impacted by the move, right? So saying goodbye to their friends, to the house. And they also will, they also can sense the emotions of others. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if mom's upset, dad's upset, they can really feel that too. Mm-hmm. And I think the statistics, 70% of highly sensitive people are also introverted.
That's a very high statistic. Yeah, I would say that's almost conclusive, really.
Yeah, and I think it's 20% of the population are highly sensitive. So it's still a smaller percentage, but...
Mm-hmm. Those, that's an interesting statistic, right? My other question was, now that we understand what an introvert is and we understand that they just need more time to themselves and they process things differently, I can say that from what my daughter, she also has learned, I can't be in a big group. It exhausts me sometimes, but sometimes she's ready for it. And if it's a certain group, she can handle it. Like she's ready for it. But other times she just, no, mom, I can't do that friend today. She exhausts me. So how can we, the anxiety component is so tricky and it adds this level of complexity here. What are the statistics of teens that have anxiety that you think, have specifically anxiety? There are introverts without anxiety, right?
Yeah, and I don't have an exact statistic, but what introverts tend to be more anxious, and I think they come into the world more anxious, is how they're wired. And then their environment will make them more anxious or less anxious, right? Depending kind of what home life looks like.
Okay, like a supportive one and a non-supportive one is what I'm probably going to...
Yeah, and if your parent is by a parent that's more anxious, right, that's going to, if you're already anxious, that's going to kind of up the anxiety as well.
Yeah. So if we were to give parents strategies and tools, what would you advise for parents to try and bond with their introverted child? What sort of things, strategies would you tell them or explain to them?
Yeah, and when I work with parents, like where I start with that is helping them understand what introversion is.
That's important.
Because with my clients that are kind of in their like late teens, early 20s, what I hear is almost like a lot of pain of not being understood, right? It's like they don't really know who they are, why they struggle. So when a parent understands introversion, it can make a huge difference. So then the parent knows kind of like what's normal for an introverted teen, what's not normal. Yeah. So when do I need to be concerned, when I don't need to be concerned, right? Uh-huh. So if you're an introvert, it can be quite common to have, you know, two or three close friends and no other friends. And for me, I don't get concerned about that. Mm-hmm. But a parent might be like, how come they don't have more friends, right? So again, the more the parent knows about introversion, the better able they are to parent their introverted child. Mm-hmm. That's the first place I would start. The second is...
Talk to your kids about who they are.
Yeah, I would say like educate themselves and then also start to educate their teen or their child about, you know, if they had a really hard day. It's like, well, I wonder if that was because there's a lot going on and that gets overwhelming for you, right? So it kind of creates that, opens up that conversation for the kid to talk about, you know, sometimes school is hard just because there's so much going on and they can have a hard day without anything bad happening.
Right? So again, do you think that's because a higher percent of them are sensitive?
That's what I see.
Very observant kids, very observant. They see everything that's happening to them emotionally around them, I think.
Yeah. And what I see too with my clients is that they see that and they can make sense of it, right? So if they're seeing things that aren't fair, they can like, it's not fair because, right? So they can see this kid's being mean to that kid and it's not okay. And again, with being more compassionate, even observing things that aren't fair, that don't impact them, will still impact them. Right.
I could definitely see that. I'm starting to see that more and more clarity, even with now what you're saying with my daughter.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Like I'm not shocked, but it's now things are starting to line up as we've understood that about her.
Right.
And a lot of these kids are going to defer for the next 2 or 3 years. There's predictions that universities will actually go down in the amount of children that are sending their applications, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
It might hurt them. It might be better for them in some ways, but for those types of kids, I think more kids and being around them always keeps them on their toes in their own way, like in their own control, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and they do tend to have a different university experience as well.
Truly, I can see it. What are some of the baby steps that you would have kids start with at home? Some to get over some of their little hurdles, perhaps? You've mentioned a couple here.
Yeah, and is that for parents or for the teen? Kind of the baby
teens,
steps?
The teens themselves.
Yeah. So typically where I start with my teen clients is looking at anxiety.
Okay.
So how much does it stop you from doing the things you want to do, right? Because in our quietness, we can, for a while, we can be comfortable on our own. And then kind of that, like, it's comfortable on our own. If we stay there too long, it now becomes isolation.
Yes.
And then once we're in isolation, yeah. So then the idea of then reaching out to your friend becomes even harder. Because then the anxiety just almost skyrockets. So taking some time to notice what things can you do easily, what things are hard to do, what things do you avoid, and the things that you avoid.
Would you suggest a list? Get the teens to write a list. I am comfortable at sports. I am comfortable at music. I am comfortable. I am not comfortable at a concert.
Exactly. Yeah.
Something like just recognizing what is turning in their heads about where they're comfortable and where they're not. And then as a parent, it was great for me to find out.
Oh, completely.
Right. I could help her.
Yeah. And it almost like it puts a logical piece to the overwhelm.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So when we can understand, like, I can't do this thing. And sometimes for introverted kids, asking a question in class is like the worst. Like, it's like, they just can't even.
They can't do it. That's where I see it in the classroom. Yeah.
So then helping them see, like, what's the downside to that, right? Mm-hmm. So then now, like, that you're not doing well enough because you never asked the math teacher. Mm-hmm. And then how do you feel about yourself, right? Because it's like, I'm so dumb, like all of those negatives.
It's a cycle, an academic cycle at school. That's what we see as teachers, right?
Right.
They won't participate. I know they know what they're talking about, some of them, though.
Yeah.
You just have to see if they know what they're talking about on their assignments, their seat work. But then I see the kids who won't just come and talk to me or to their regular teacher, because I'm not in the classroom anymore. But you can see the introverted kid. There's usually about 10% of class. That's what I would go by. But seems to be much higher now. That's what worries me, is this keeps, or is it just the change in behavior from so much phone time, alone time is what I call it. Phone time is alone time to them. And they know the kids are losing their social skills. So how do we know if it's introversion or it's just phone addiction? That's where we're.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great question. Yeah. And I can imagine. Say that again.
How do we know? Because it's, what is it? Is it because phone addiction, they can be introverted in their room from 4 p.m. till 10 p.m. at night, and they could be on their phones till 3 a.m. and then they wake up at 7 and then they do the whole anxious day again, and they don't want to miss anything. So they go on, even though there's cyberbullying or there's social media things that they're seeing that upset them, and they start to get anxious. They won't talk to us. So it's a whole cycle, that this cycle needs to be broken because the kids won't talk. Right. And so is it aversion? Is it introversion? That is what I'm saying. Or is it phone addiction?
Yeah. And that makes sense. Right. And
maybe that's what I'm seeing. Is it phone addiction, not as much introversion?
That's it. Yeah. And I know a few times I've talked to a parent where they think that their child's introverted, but it's more that their child just isn't talking to them, but they're talking to their friends a lot. Right. And whether that, and in that example, it is through the phone or video games. Mm-hmm. Right. So
it's damaging, very damaging when kids are now, the newest research is saying that kids are looking for confirmation from peers rather than speaking to their family, because they're talking about 400 texts a day. They're FaceTiming their friends, but FaceTiming is very, very low on their level of communication. It's more like they're texting 200 texts by the end of school, because they're texting all through classes, which to me, as an educator, I'd like to see phones banned out of the school so the kids can just have a break in their brains and focus on school. And then at the end of the day, then go on the phone. It gives them such a nice break, right?
Yeah. And it doesn't, imagine the pressure to be social all the time, like whether you're introverted or extroverted, right? That's, you know, the introvert will get kind of filled up quicker than the extrovert, but it's still that if we always have that phone with us,
right?
Like, is it okay to ignore your friend because you don't want to talk right now, but the friend knows you got the message because your phone's always with you. Mm-hmm. So it, yeah, just so much I think that our teens are having to deal with.
Yeah, I hope there's a new message I'm trying to get across to teens, and hopefully it'll come out more on some of my sports podcasts, where some of the Olympians are saying, you are a better person without your phone. You have to be connected to yourself and be self-aware and know how to deal and cope with your own emotions in order to focus on your running or your bobsledding or whatever it is your sport is. You have to be without your phone almost 8 hours a day. So we're having a hard time as a society getting off them and being productive now. So it's really heartbreaking to see that unless we have this shift that's going to come from schools or medicine, which medicine wants the schools to ban the phones because they see the anxieties in all kids spiking by 3 o'clock. Like, they just start sweating. Right? They're worried. What's someone didn't like my dress on Facebook, and they worry about it all day. So if we can take some of that anxiety away from them that never was there for the last few thousand years, and our children could categorize their feelings in a much slower process and a much more thorough process 15 years ago versus today, where everything's 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
And an introvert, how would that feel to them?
Yeah, because it's, and introverts tend to think deeply about things. So if you get that comment about somebody didn't like your outfit, mm-hmm. like it's a bit like your day's done. Yeah, because now you're thinking about that. What does that mean? Does that person like you? Will you have friends?
Exactly.
Right. So, and then what do you wear tomorrow? Where if they never got that comment, they just wear clothes to school that they like.
Right.
So, yeah. And I think that
as educators,
I can say that again.
We need to shut them off, either have a button or something that can just stop them from going on to their personal devices. And of course, we need them to learn technology. We need them to learn how to code. We need them to learn how to use spreadsheets. But we also need them to just be able to be at peace with their own minds and calm their minds. And if we have all this knowledge out there, so do the physicians, so does the Canadian mental health physicians, but they're not doing anything about it, which really breaks my heart, to be honest. They have more power than I thought. I didn't know that. They can actually say to the schools, this is recommended, like they did in Europe, and they just stopped it. They stopped phone use in schools, and the kids that were introverted started to come out of their shells, started to talk, started to join teams, the depression at three of the schools went completely down, and anxiety went all the way down, the one in school in Quebec and one in France, and the introverted kids were coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, because it's common for introverts to be anxious being social, right? And they can deal with that and manage it, but the phone becomes that almost like that shield, it protects them, mm-hmm. right? So if I can talk to my friends through texting, you know, through social media, mm-hmm. then I feel less anxious.
Okay.
And it's like less anxious, but more anxious, right? Depending on what the interaction was.
Yeah.
But then the idea then of asking a teacher a question or, mm-hmm. right, because then it becomes even harder. Like the less we do something, typically the harder it is to do it.
Right.
So yeah. So that all makes sense to me what you're saying.
So I have two more questions. I didn't realize we were getting towards our end here. We talked about the benefits of self-talk, which is the inner voice that we use to talk to ourselves to make decisions for our whole lives. Once parents find out that their child is more introverted and anxious, should they start self-talk right away and teach them about what it is?
Yeah. Because I think even to name that for kids, because sometimes people don't know. And then kids might not know that it, like how they talk to themselves, and that how they talk to themselves makes a huge difference in how they live their life.
Mm-hmm.
So then if parents can have that conversation with them. So yeah, so I think that would be great for parents to do more of that.
Yeah. And to learn how to make decisions is important even for adults. And to talk in our heads all day. And my kids will say, Mom, we got it. We know what you're talking about. Cause I'll be packing for us to go to soccer. Okay, we need a water bottle, a blanket, this and this, and an umbrella, because in case it rains, we need this. So that I talk out loud so that they can process how we pack to go to soccer and they know what we need. Guess what? We go to soccer and they've packed everything that I've been talking like a crazy woman and saying they had it all ready. Mom, you said we need umbrella in case it rains. You said we need a blanket. I wasn't malevolent or anything. I just was talking outside how I'm processing my decision making out loud. And I've been doing that since they were younger. You know, oh, we better not turn on the hot water because we could get burned. So we better start it off on warm, and then we get it warmer to warm up the tub. You know, just silly things like that. But that makes the language skills develop and the whole context of our words develop. So because babies can learn self-talk. I didn't know that until I started to get into it. Because they start learning language. That's the beginning of their self-talk. I was shocked. I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah, that's quite amazing, actually.
Yeah, and what really made me really, I was like almost in tears the other day reading that a pediatrician is saying that mothers aren't talking to their children anymore, their babies, while they're feeding and nursing. And when they're younger, they're always on their phones. So babies actually are not listening to words or sounds or music like when you're nursing them, and they don't have a sense of language. And so they're not going to school with full sentences like they did 10 years ago.
Right.
Doesn't that scare you? It scared me.
Oh yeah. And I just think of like that, even just from an attachment perspective too, that hearing
you.
Yeah.
I'm terrified for the next 10 years, to be honest, in education, because we're seeing such violence from kids. We're seeing the swearing, we're seeing combative, we're seeing kids drop out and depressed and anxious. And it's funny how I don't see such a heavy presence about this, whereas there should be. Like in other countries, they've solved pretty much their issues and they're working on them. Where we in Canada, I don't see much happening. So...
Yeah. And frustrating when, like, to me, the evidence is so clear
about
the negative impact of cell phones. And it doesn't mean that we never use cell phones, but
just cell phones, though. It's also parents not talking to their kids. That's also part of the big problem, right?
Oh, completely.
And the way we do talk to our children, like, I had to change the way I talked to them, because I was finding that, wait a minute, am I parenting the way I was parented? Because that's not going to work for you or you. So I had to change the way I talked and how we made decisions, so the kids had more autonomy to make decisions, and things got better, way better. Less arguing, less nagging, less you got to feed the cat, you got to feed the dog, you got to do your chores, the dishwasher. It just, now it's almost, you know, I do this for you and I need you to help me. So right, make the right related consequence for the, like, the dishwasher. Well, then I guess you can't use a plate to eat. Like, and it was, well, how am I gonna eat, Mom? Well, I don't know. Maybe you should learn how to put your dishes away in the dishwasher. So, right, make it relatable. You're like brushing teeth. Well, if you're not going to brush your teeth, well, I guess you can't ever eat sugar again. And they're like, oh, okay, I'll brush. So it's just changing how I made those consequences related to the issue.
Completely, yeah. And to me, like, it's just such a respectful way to be in a relationship too, right? Like, it's so like parent-child.
Not just a dictatorship.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And if we listen to our kids, like the reaction we get from them, mm-hmm. you know, do we need to change what we're doing? And it's maybe a few months ago, my oldest, who's 14, was getting quite mad at me because I would be on my phone and he'd start talking. I'd be like, He's like, Mom, you're not listening to me.
Yep. And I had to wake up and I don't, yeah.
Completely. And like, he's right. I wasn't listening to him. And there's really nothing on my phone that I needed to look at.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Phones. One of the saddest things, I have one more question for you, but this one story where we were at a hockey tournament and my son was in it. I forget the age, but this is the reason why I started this company essentially, was the dad was on the phone with a little boy. Like, I guess the little boy, he could navigate an iPad, but he wasn't completely really verbal. So maybe two or three, but he was running around. Like, he could say, Mom, Dad, take it. You know, but again, speech doesn't necessarily dictate age to me anymore because kids are 2 or 3 years delayed now. Right? Because they're just watching their iPads and not taking in language. So he's sitting there and the dad's sitting there and the mom comes over and the dad says, oh, well, are we switching now? And I was listening because I'm right there. And he goes, well, you had your half hour on your phone. Now I get mine. And so the mom switched with the dad. And the dad went over and his kid was playing hockey against my kid. They weren't even watching their kid play hockey. It was a game, a tournament.
Right.
They didn't care. They brought them to the tournament and they only cared about being on their phones.
Yeah.
Their little kid who scored a goal. I saw the kid come up the stairs, the same kid. Did you see me? Did you see me, Mom? Oh yeah, I saw you. She did not see him because the goal happened when she was on her phone and the dad was over leaning against this shelf kind of bar and looking over, but really on his phone. They weren't paying attention to their child at all. It was all about their phone. And then they said later on, well, are you putting him to bed tonight? Because I'll get my cell phone time then. They're arguing about who's going to get their cell phone time and who is fighting over putting their child to bed. And that's right there. I went, that is just destructive to humanity. And I couldn't even say anything because it was someone I knew. Right. And I didn't want to have a whole, but it made me think, is this where we're going? Like, is this really where we're heading? So.
And just, there's so much in that story. Right? Like even that.
Attachment, attention.
Yeah, feelings.
There's no filling the cups up.
No. Like, if our phone is filling up our cup, it's going to be quite empty.
Oh.
Right.
Yeah, you're never going to fill
it.
No.
Yeah.
Well, my last question is, I see that you help with teens with several different approaches psychologically and in your social work approaches. So there's narrative theory. We know that there's different types. There's emotional focus therapy. We know about cognitive behavioral therapy, but the one I wanted you to talk about was the somatic therapy. Could you define what it is and then explain it, how it would help?
Yeah. Somatic therapy, it's one of my favorite ways to work. So it really looks at, like, so when we've been hurt, how the body kind of holds those wounds, holds those feelings. Mm-hmm. And especially if we've been hurt as kids and there's really nobody to talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like all those feelings, memories stay inside. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to kind of go deeper. And it's about noticing if you're talking about something hard, what do you feel in the body? It's often some level of tension. Mm-hmm. And you can go into that. The feeling's going to start to show up, anger, sadness, grief.
So acknowledging a feeling with an emotion. or saying, I'm sad. This is the feeling of being sad. This is anxious and butterflies, but butterflies can be good too. In sports, we talk a lot to acknowledge our butterflies and how they're good because we know you're prepared. And then the butterflies, they just ignore them after that. They get used to them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if we can notice, like, our body is so helpful, right? And I think we live in a world that really puts so much focus on the brain, right? And what you're thinking, what you produce, or if we can really notice how we're feeling in our body, then we know if we're sad, mad, happy. And when we follow those, like we typically make better choices.
Okay.
Right? So it's helping the teens notice that. And then giving them language on how do you tell your parent that you're sad or angry or your friend. And it's okay to have these feelings too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it can be a way to really slow down that process and really kind of tap into how they're doing.
So it's basically a system that filters in emotions and how we internalize them. That's what it kind of sounds like. Am I wrong? Okay.
Yeah. No, and then how to feel.
Our body reacts to those feelings.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And it can be quite
helpful. How does this help the introverted teen though? Can you share with our listeners how that would help them?
Yeah. It slows down the process. So as introverts, like, I think as you said earlier, like just observe so much, take so much in.
Yeah.
So they can just, and introverts are so good at containing, meaning they can be happy, sad, angry, and it's like nobody could tell.
Yeah.
So with this, it helps them. So then they can feel like this internal chaos. And then they want to get away from this internal chaos. So I can go to my phone or work really hard on that assignment. Mm-hmm. So it's helping them see that there's a lot of value in all of these feelings. And how do you feel them safely? Mm-hmm. My own theory is that when we, over a long period of time, when we don't feel our feelings, that's part of why anxiety rises. Because we feel the anxiety instead of anger, sadness, disappointment. Mm-hmm. So, and then what are the tools can you do around expressing your feelings, feeling your feelings? So
these are all good because we are not letting our children sit and teaching them how to deal with emotions anymore.
No.
We're not connecting and helping them to connect their bodies, brains with that emotion of, well, you were hurt. You know, Johnny took your truck. I saw that. And that's okay to feel sad. But did you go over to him and say, can we share the truck? Like work with the emotion, right? Acknowledge it, validate it, repeat it back. Go over and say, Johnny, no, you took my truck and I was playing with it, but can we share it? Right? That's hard to get them to do. Take steps. But at certain levels, like 4 and 5 years old, they can manage that.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we give them space to have their feelings, then they can manage that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I'm just going to go over a couple of strategies that you're leaving today for our listeners and all our parents out there. So you're saying that if we have an introverted child that it has anxiety or has a sense of sensitivity. I also want to add that in there. A lot of introverted kids are very sensitive. So we want to educate our own teens about what introversion means, about how they're going to feel about that, learn how to talk to them. But I also want to add in here, and we talked about it, is learn how to listen to them differently and what we're hearing from them.
Mm-hmm.
Encourage them to make a list, if you will, of where they feel secure and happy, and where find out a little list of the things that don't make them feel secure and work with it, because these kids are not going to be the ones we put in the box and follow norms. They're going to be quieter. They're going to have less friends. They're probably not going to be the popular kid. And if they are, they hide it well. Right. I had seen a few introverted kids be the popular kid, but they have only two good friends.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point too. Yeah.
Right. You got to watch how. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your webinars that you have coming out before we say goodbye?
Yeah. Yeah. And then one of my favorite things to do is to help parents parent their introverted teens.
Yeah.
So basically the webinar will go into more detail of what we've talked about, and just those different, like going deeper into, you know, what is kind of like the life of the introverted teen.
Right.
Because often these teens aren't really telling their parents what that looks like. And so they're helping the parent understand their introverted teen better. And then how can they parent their introverted teen? So different strategies, you know, that I use with my own introverted kids, that I help with the parents that I work with. So basically the webinar will cover those two pieces so they can be more confident as a parent.
Mm-hmm. With that type of child, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It'd be the same as if we had a child that was had violent tendencies or had autistic tendencies, or we have to find out what our children need, educate ourselves about that to become a better parent to that child.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's great. Because
when our needs are met, we're all calmer, right? So helping parents, just like what are the needs of their introverted teens?
Yeah.
And it's not a lot of hard work.
I don't think so. I think once you just learn what it is and you learn how you have to fix how you speak and talk and listen, it's becoming almost like a toolbox. And this is my toolbox for this child. And my other child is very different. So I have to have a different toolbox for them. And then my other child, he's like a complete extrovert. And so in our house, it's a different dinner hour, let me tell you.
Oh, completely. Yeah. Yeah. And I like that idea. Like with each child, a different toolbox. Because
Just like every student I would have. I'd have 90 kids a day. None of them are the same.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And there'd be overlap, but also uniqueness, right, with them.
Right, right. Well, Tracy, thank you. And I wanted to say that you are from Quiet Pathways and that I really appreciate your approach to improving mental health and that you're helping the world battle mental health issues and making families happy again, one family at a time. So keep doing what you're doing, because I think it's great. I think we should be actually writing courses like this and helping teachers out, because teachers see more of the issues that we have today, even in a teacher's college like perspective. Like a course for mental health. That's really what it's coming down to, I'm finding. Teachers want more information about how to cope with this issue, anxiety, depression, violence, or lack of security attachment bond, or an introverted child. All this is, we just almost need to fuel them and give them their weapons and their arsenal to help teach our kids.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when kids get that support, right? It deepens the learning too in the classroom. So,
yeah. Well, thanks so much for being here today. And hopefully we'll see your webinar soon.
Yeah. Thanks very much for having me.
You're welcome.